Hello, it's Freaky Master, and today we're going to be talking about some of the greatest defeats in history. But before I start, don't forget to like, comment, subscribe, and email me at freakymeisterpodcast@gmail.com. You can also check out my website at squarerootstudios.com/freakymeister, which is where my podcasts come out first. So, as you heard, we're going to be talking about some of the greatest defeats in history. I know that sounds kind of counterintuitive, but these are both examples of times when a very small group of people held off a gigantic invading force against all the odds. I'm going to start with the Battle of Thermopylae, which you probably have heard of. It's the Greek one with where they have a small pass and they fight off people. Then I'm going to talk about the Battle of Sarigarhi, which you probably haven't heard of, and I think that one, the second one's even cooler. So, we're going to start with the Battle of Thermopylae, and it's actually spelled Thermopylae, and you can tell because of the end with the P-Y-L-A-E, and that's actually the name of the area in which this battle was fought. So, let me set the stage. At this point, all the cities in Greece were actually city-states. So they were, like, all effectively their own countries. And there were a lot of treaties and wars and stuff that happened there in ancient Greece. I think this was really before, Rome was a thing. And actually, the greatest empire of that day was Persia. So Persia was gigantic. It stretched from the Middle East to Europe and Greece. It really stretched far. So it was a gigantic empire. And there were two main city-states that we're going to talk about a lot. It's Sparta, which you probably have heard of, again, probably because of this event, and Athens. Athens has the Acropolis and all of those cool tourist sites. So at this time, Sparta was a really, really militaristic city-state that was built on the backs of the slaves that they had conquered. And most of them were actually from the surrounding city-states, which was really interesting. Like, they conquered nearby countries, and basically that allowed them to become even more militaristic. And this basically allowed them to train their men from birth to fight in wars and stuff like that. And it wasn't all to fight wars against other people. It was mainly to protect themselves against a slave uprising. And around this time, Athens, you know, was a great democracy. There were a lot of... They didn't really focus on war that much. So they actually and kept spreading the idea of democracy. And the Spartans were worried that the idea of democracy might get to the slaves, which is generally a bad idea if you're trying to keep an entire population in enslavement. So that was one of their main concerns. But at this time, Persia started invading Greece, and this was a bad idea. So it turns out there was an alliance created called the Hellenic Alliance, and they were trying to decide what to do. And at this point, Athens and Sparta stepped in and basically say, we're going to hold them off here. And that place was Thermopylae. So this event actually happened in the late summer of 480, and this small group of Spartans, led by King Leonidas, and they were actually staying behind to help fend off the Persians so that all the Athenians and all the other groups that they had pulled into this alliance could get out. Because they ended up getting surrounded while trying to hold the Persians from the rest of Greece. And this was a problem, because again, there was sea on the right side and then like cliffs on the other side. And the Persians had actually climbed up some steep cliffs and gone all the way around on this small mountain pass, and they actually had to go single file. But they ended up breaking out on the back. So there was a small group of elite soldiers on the back, and then there were the rest of the Persian army in the front. And actually, the rest of the troops, they knew this, they were kind of screwed at this point. So the rest of the troops broke through this a small group of elite soldiers, while the Spartans held the main army from attacking their flank. And this was the Spartan. This was basically the battle between the Spartans and the main army of the Persians. And that main army was led by Xerxes. So they arrived just west of the pass, and they camped and waited for like 5 days before attacking. And the reason for this is because they couldn't really see how many people were waiting on the other side of the pass, because there was a hastily constructed wall there. Second, he was waiting for his fleet to catch up, for reinforcements. Also wanted his fleet so he could land troops in the rear of the Greeks, so he doesn't have to worry about this pass that really causes a lot of the difficulty. So he was, during this time that he was waiting for his fleet, he actually sent a spy to see what the Greeks were doing, and the astonished horsemen returned a report that he had seen the Spartans stripping for exercise and fixing each other's hair. And this didn't really seem to deter Xerxes much, because he basically immediately sent a herald to propose that the defenders of the pass should surrender and become allies of the great king. Then in return, they would be allowed to depart unharmed, and they could expect to get some of the land of those who refused to surrender. Now, this is important because it allowed all of the Greeks to have a decision. Are they going to fight? Because if they fight, they may lose everything. But if they didn't fight, they would let the Persians in, and the Persians would technically take them over. But it was actually surprising that the Persians didn't allow slavery, and they really didn't care what religion you had as long as you were, like, under their control. Whereas the Spartans and all that wouldn't have liked it very much, which may have contributed to the decision. The Greeks decided to fight. At first, the battle went entirely according to the plan of the Greeks. The narrowness of the pass at the middle gate negated the advantage of numbers for the imperial troops, so the Spartans and the other troops could just fight them head-on. And it was kind of ended up being one-on-one combat. And as long as you were a good soldier, like better than all the rest of the soldiers in the Persian army, in a one-on-one fight, you could just beat one, and then beat the next one, and beat the next one, and then could continue until you found someone who was better than you. And that really pitted the skill level specifically of the troops against each other. And the Persian army hadn't been training for war from birth, as the Spartans had. But this was around the point when the local guy, a Milanian named Ephialtes, I think I'm pronouncing that wrong, offered to show the Persians a way around the back of the defending force, just like I said before. Leonidas, the ruler of the Spartans, had actually been aware of this path from the beginning. He had stationed 1,000 Phocians, another group in the Hellenic alliance, there to stop any encircling movement. Though the problem is, they really didn't put up any resistance against these elite troops. But word got through to Leonidas that the position had been outflanked, and there seems to have been time to abandon the position and withdraw to the south before the immortals under Hydarnes arrived. He wanted to stay behind because there was actually an oracle that said the death of a Spartan king would have to save Sparta, would save Sparta from destruction. So I guess he was just like, I have to die in battle, that's how it's going to work. So he I guess gave his life for that. So that was the point when they had the really famous standoff that was depicted in the movie 300, in which only 300 Spartans held off the huge army by fighting them one by one by one in this tiny pass. Great, so that was the first one. Now we're going to go on to the Battle of Sarigarhi. And this was actually a battle that is in the little town of Sarigarhi. And this was located between the frontier between colonial India and Afghanistan. And this, again, has always been a spot where people get defeated. Like, the Soviets got defeated, the British got defeated, lots of people have been defeated in Afghanistan because it is so hot and, muddy and all of that. But this is actually around the time of when the British occupied India. The British actually were trying to get into Afghanistan, or at least really build up a big presence on the border of India and Afghanistan, by basically making a chain of forts. And so you build a fort go a little bit farther, build another fort. So you'd have a chain of supply, I guess. And these were connected by small towns. And Sarigarhi was one of them, between these two towns called Lockhart and Gulliston. And they were placed on vital high ground. And there were other small picket fort posts built nearby, and including on the high part of the main range, west of the village of Sarigarhi. This was important because both forts were able to see it, so they could communicate using heliographic signal communications, which are basically signals using flashes of sunlight. And so you have a mirror on a stand, basically. Even though the telegraph had been invented a little earlier, the heliograph became a necessary means of sending Morse code on the frontier, because they did lay telegraph lines below the ground, but they were constantly being cut, because you can't really defend all of the ground in between each of those two forts, so it's a lot easier to have a thing that they can't block sunlight. And this was manned by 36 Sikhs, which were Indian, I guess, elite soldiers. 168 soldiers were at Lockhart under Houghton's command. And I think he was a military officer that was in command of these two forts. While 175 riflemen were at Gulliston under Major Charles DeVoe. The picket at Dar contained 37, and Sartop and Sarigarhi both contained 21 Sikhs. The latter also held a camp follower named Dad, I think that's how you pronounce it, who cleaned and cooked for the regiment. The problem is, when the British were kind of drawing boundaries on the frontier, the people nearby, the Afridi people of nearby Tira, rised up in the defiance of the peace that they held in 16 years with the British. By August 1897, the Mullah of Hadah, an influential preacher, had declared jihad to go out for a holy war and defend the religion of the Holy Prophet. The Afridis convinced their neighboring Orkzai, I think that's how you pronounce it, clan to join the cause and marched on the Samana. I'm just failing so hard. Thing was peaceful until a reconnaissance patrol sent out to the Samana Souk, the highest peak of the mountain range, on 9th of September, found that a strong force of tribesmen was assembled near Karanghabur, I think that's how you pronounce it. I really don't know. 29 standards were counted, giving an indication of enemy numbers. The next day, more enemies arrived, pushing estimates to 25,000. So, there was definitely something going on. So the enemy surrounded Sarigarhi on the 12th of September, knowing full well that this would cut communications and troop movements between the forts of Lockhart and Gulliston, and that with the British forces spread out, it would no longer be possible for Houghton to send aid. The 22 men inside were led by an experienced sergeant in Halidavar Ishar Singh, who rallied his men to defend their positions. The Pathans attacked around 9 a.m., but were repulsed with around 60 losses as the Sikhs fired upon the mass of men. The enemy dived behind rocks and dips in the ground for cover, but two tribesmen had also managed to get to the post and remained close under the walls of the northwest bastion, where there was a dead angle, which couldn't be reached by the defender's fire. Generally, when you're building a fort, you're going to try and make sure that on every angle that they could possibly attack the fort, that you can shoot them. But in this angle, you couldn't. They were right up against the wall, and they could not be shot. Unseen by the Sikhs inside, they began digging beneath the walls, and this is a bad idea. They're basically getting enemies inside, and they are fighting a losing battle. The enemy next set fire to bushes and shrubbery around the base of the hill to create a smoke screen in which they can edge forward inside. They concentrated their gunfire on the wooden front door, which was, I guess, just made of wood. It wasn't really strong, so they could have just beat it down eventually. And a signaler, Girmunk Singh, messaged an account of the of events, though he didn't pick up any incoming messages from Major DeVue at Gulliston, who could not see the diggers clearly and was trying in vain to alert Sarigarhi to the danger. And this is how we know of this. The smokescreen may account for why he didn't pick up the flashes, although light is known to penetrate through such a haze. More likely that is that he was unable to do so, as he was just one man doing the job of three. Heliography required at least three men, one to flash messages, another to read out incoming messages, and a third to write it all down. Impossible that he could have done it, but the pressure of the situation made it unlikely. Haughton, too, the guy in the other fort, tried several times to sally forward with a party of rifles to divert the enemy away from Sarigarhi, but the sheer number of tribesmen mean that he couldn't get very far without being outflanked. The Sikhs continued to hold back the enemy, but by noon, one infantryman had been killed and another wounded, with three rifles broken by enemy gunfire. The battle culminated around 3 p.m. when a section of wall, under attack from the diggers, began to cave in. The enemy gave a final cry to advance and rushed through the new gap. As the enemy crowded their own dead and injured to get into Sarigarhi, the commander of the unit, Ishar Singh, realized that they couldn't retreat back to the inner wall in time. They would just get attacked from the back. So he covered the retreat and engaged in hand-to-hand combat with a pistol and a sword, and cut down at least 10 men before getting overwhelmed. And this is what allowed the Sikhs to retreat into the inner wall. At this point, the signaler, Gurmukh Singh, is said to actually have asked permission to pack away his equipment before joining the fight, as he had become the last person standing. The people in the fort watched. He bravely defended that last position. The 21 Sikhs had made a valiant last stand, and the enemy had paid a high price for their victory, with around 180 dead. Well, those are the two stories, and it actually, that is the only battle in history where all of the people involved were actually awarded a medal. This was mainly inspired by the Extra History channel on YouTube. They do great animation, and you should totally check them out. So all of my sources can be found in the description. Thank you for listening to another podcast, and I soon hope to get back on my regular schedule. You can email me at freakmeisterpodcast@gmail.com with your favorite part of this episode, or post it in the comments below. And you can check out my website at squarestudios.com/freakmeister. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe for more podcasts just like this. Thanks, and I'll see you next week.